it's basically the...
Do you interview candidates before endorsements?
Yes. What we did the last time, we had an endorsement conference. The executive board of the AFL-CIO sat down with the candidates, but prior to that, I sent each candidate a registered letter inviting them to the screening session, also a questionnaire for them to answer. And we put general questions of interest to us and to the state, and they answer them, expand on their answer if they wanted to, and we request that they return them and also appear before the screening committee to defer the question to make statements. And we had a pretty good response to that. And we invited Republicans as well as Democrats. We invited Claude Curt. He claims he never got the invitation.
But he didn't come.
No, I know he got the letter because I received the return receipt for the registered letter. That's why I sent him registered, so no one could claim they didn't get the letter. I still have it in my files. Where he claimed he was never invited, but he was. He didn't show. We felt we knew we weren't going to endorse him, but we felt we owed him the courtesy, as we would in this upcoming screening. We would invite every candidate, no matter whether we liked him or didn't like him, or anticipated that he was going to be very unfriendly or not. We would still give him the courtesy of hearing him out or her out.
To what extent do you, I guess, communicate is what I'm really interested in with business representatives in terms of pending legislation?
We contact them, you might say, year-round, because we have a very unique system in Florida now. We have a committee system. The legislature has made up standing committees. Every committee is a standing committee, and the chairman of that committee can at any time during the interim between sessions call committee meetings and hear and discuss and act on legislation. Then when the session opens, they can come in with bills they've already heard. They can call a committee meeting in Dade County or Leon County or any county they want at their will, but they notify all parties they believe would be interested in, and they usually make a matter of public record by advertising the fact they're going to have a meeting, and we try to have representatives there. If it's a bill of mutual interest to labor and industry, we contact the labor, the industry people, and talk with them about what their view is on the legislation and try as best we can to hammer out our differences beforehand so we can go and present to the legislature more or less a united front.
How about it?
We're not always successful, but we try.
How about, say, this workman's comp move to try and get workman's comp mm-hmm. on a formula basis? How would it operate in such a case?
I mean, as far as labor and industry?
Or? Right.
We have gotten the cooperation of the lobbyists of Associated Industries and others in this particular instance. There are just a few hang-ups they have. One is the inclusion of migrant labor. They were upset about that. They had some qualms. I don't know why, because most of them we find are statistics that were provided by the departments involved showed that of the 80% of them were already covered either under insurance or under workman's comp, that the employer found it to his advantage rather than run the risk of being sued, did provide workman's compensation coverage. But there are just a few minor hang-ups between our point of view right now and the management's point of view. Come close to what we might say is an agreement.
Is the Associated Industries Group the most powerful industry or business group in the state?
Probably. It would be a tie between them and probably the construction road builders particularly are very powerful. So are the mobile home people. They're probably the most powerful, I would think. Try to get some law passed against or about mobile homes and you really find this place goes afire. They are very, very powerful. interest because there are so many mobile homes in the state of Florida. And we've tried, say we in conjunction with other consumer groups have tried to get legislation, support legislation for tighter regulations on construction, tie downs and so forth for these mobile homes, and it's almost impossible. They really lobbied to death anything that we tried to introduce.
Is the source of their power of campaign contributions?
I really don't know what tactics they use, but I do know that they have out here somewhere in the woods a whole complex of mobile homes that are made available for any legislator who wants to have a place to stay during the session. And I know in one session, I don't know if it's in existence in this particular session or not, but they had round-the-clock steak and bar service. Anytime you wanted to go out there, you were out there at 3 o'clock in the morning and get a steak 2 inches thick and any kind of drinks you wanted to have, served by the most attractive girls I've ever seen in my life. This is part of their lobbying effort, I would assume. Again, I can't prove any of this, it's just a matter of, I do know they had these homes there, and I know that it was the mobile home industry that placed them there. But the terrible part about this mobile home thing is that under the existing law, trailers that are rejected in Georgia, the Georgia state law refuses to allow to be placed in Georgia, can be trucked down and placed in Florida. And you can ride around these mobile home parks and you'll see a little Georgia seal on them saying they're made in the state of Georgia, but they're not allowed to be left in the state. The seal doesn't say that, but they're made in Georgia and trucked down here. Yet there are mobile home construction companies in Florida. Yet we are allowed to, they are allowed to set up rejects from other states in Florida, which bothers me. And I've seen some of these things when they've been hit by just mild winds, and it's just a terrible tragedy to even allow them to be placed, really. They're so flimsy. And they're absolutely tinderboxes if there's a fire in them. They look like that. I've had several real bad experiences with them. And it's usually the elderly people, or conversely, the very young who can't afford a home and have a small family, small income, are compelled to live in these things. And they're really just not worth anything. Very, very flimsy construction.
Who regulates them? I mean, what agency?
That's it. We can't get any regulation on them. They have mobile home regulations, but they're very lax. Most counties don't even have. Some counties are stricter than others. Some it's a county as far as tie downs. Some counties you can roll one in and just leave it sitting on concrete blocks. You don't have to tie it down at all. So the first wind comes along and push it over. Dade County has the strictest code as far as tie downs are concerned. Other counties are beefing up since they've had problems with them. But when you talk about strong lobbyists, I would say that Associated Industries is powerful, but I wouldn't discount the mobile home and the citrus, of course, is also one that you certainly couldn't discount. Growers associations, they're all probably 4 or 5 that would almost vie for first place as far as influence is concerned. Plus the fact we have a lot of rural legislators, farm-oriented, peanut farmers, I call them. But we've got a long way to go. We're making, I think, great strides in moving ahead. One of the things I try to do is get as much exposure in the various forums, debates, addressing Rotary groups, luncheon meetings. Anytime that someone says we want to hear from organized labor, I make myself available, even though I know I'm walking into maybe a lion's den. I feel this is what we have to do to get organized labor's image improved. And that, I think, is the main thing. Once we do that, we're in good shape. But when someone says labor now, it's like saying a dirty word. The everybody thinks of someone who is going to beat them over the head with a stick if they don't do what they're supposed to do. Unfortunately, we have that kind of person still around in some areas. And it always happens to me when I'm going to go to talk to a high school or college group that the day before there'll be some incident, some picket loses his temper and beats somebody over the head with a stick or something like that. And it's headlines. As I always tell them, by statistics, it's a known fact there are more bank presidents in jail than there are union presidents in jail. But you don't read about it.
Anything else?
No. Anything else you want to add?
Not that I know of. I hope I've given you some insight into what we try and do. And certainly anything else that you can think of, I'd be happy to send you any information you want. I'll send you additional copies of that material.
Okay,
like
fine. I'll.
85% of our union membership are located in 9 counties.
Is this the 9 largest counties?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any guess as to what percent of that group is registered?
I would guess from the preliminary report from Women's Activity, she was very much concerned that she was coming up with a figure of less than 40% were registered. The ones she's checked so far, this one just, and this is in Hillsborough County, which is a fairly, you know, pep area. You know, I was surprised at that number.
That's Tampa, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Less than 40.
Less than 40. I was really, and she said, we always suspected that it would be in the building trades group that we would have less registration. This was not proven to be the fact.
So you are getting some information you didn't have before.
Already, right.
So is this likely to result in an emphasis on voter registration?
Absolutely.
Is that going to grow out of it?
Very.
End interview with Art Hallgren. No more transcription. This tape.